Johnson to see how absurd it is, I think, is astonishing. But what's worse is actually that we have now, thanks to the Russians and thanks to the Sputnik V vaccine, which showed good efficacy.
We have 10 seconds.
Unfortunately, has run into production problems. We have 34 manufacturers around the world who can produce the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And so what they should do is to expand their manufacturing to include these manufacturers. Then we could actually make that vaccine work in the world. It would be good for them. It would be good for us.
Achal Prabhula, we want to thank you so much for joining us from Bangalore, India. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned natural foods cooperative featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and farmers market every Wednesday year-round. Located at Southeast Tibbetts Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years. Online at peoples.coop.
Okay. Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I am Cecil Prescott with my co-host, Celeste Carey. And today is Monday, the 20th of September, 2021. And I want to wish you a good morning and invite you who are listeners to take part of our annual KBOO's annual fall drive. You may do so by going to kboo.fm/give, and that is one way in which you can join a community of people who are empowering ourselves to create sounds of democracy. KBOO programming wants to inform and empower you to make a difference. We just listened to Democracy Now, and we do know from that report how democracy is a very fragile experiment. And so community radio makes a difference, and you make a difference. Go to kboo.fm/give and become a part of change to make democracy a reality for all people. And again, this is Cecil Prescott with you, and we want to continue our conversations with you, and I'll remind you our phone lines will be 503-231-8187, but don't give us a call quite yet. Celeste and I need to check in and see how we are doing, and just to share with you some news and update you on some things that we are doing and lay a foundation for our conversation this morning. A few things that we will talk about is an update on our conversation last week on the legitimacy or the possibility of having Portland protest the abortion law in Texas. Many of you recall that last week in our program, we talked about the proposal at that time from Mayor Ted Wheeler's to launch an economic boycott of Texas. Well, a lot has changed in a week, and we will update you on that and maybe get your opinions about what has happened. There has been an ongoing strike against Nabisco, started in here in Portland. This weekend there has been a settlement, and maybe you might have some thoughts about that. And Celeste, that sounds like a lot of noise. Like, he just, whoa.
I didn't have any headphones, and then the pair I got weren't working, and then our illustrious and very ingenious engineer Ray helped me find a good pair. It was about to have a little bit of well, I won't say a conniption. That's too much energy.
All right.
But yeah, I was listening to you, but you know, one of the things I had wanted to talk about, we kind of hinted at it a little bit last week in the show. When we talked about this whole idea of a nation divided,
mm-hmm.
and one of the things that came across the airwaves in the news a little while ago was the fact that in Oregon, we had a surprising amount of people, especially in eastern Oregon, who supported the idea of white supremacist values. And the other thing that we noted was that there were counties, eastern counties, that wanted to secede from Oregon and maybe join a greater Idaho region. And we were kind of surprised. You know, the article said 4 in 10 Oregonians agree with white nationalist views. Now, that may not seem like a lot.
40%?
No, wait a minute now. 4 in 10, I know, 40%, but hold on. Because people say, well, 4 in 10, you know, that means that there's still a majority. No, that's not the point. The point is that in a state that had a basically no African American policy, that is a lot in 2021. And given the fact that we're trying to figure out ways to both unite folks and also purposefully address some of these values, and we're not seeing a whole lot of success, that's concerning. And so one of the things that I thought would be interesting to discuss is not only the fact of what is our response to that, recognizing that in 2021, we still have 40% of the Oregonian population who agree with these white nationalist arguments, according to the survey, and we're inclined to use tools to both enlighten and hold accountable people, and these tools seem to be divisive themselves sometimes. Are we going to make progress? Do we need to retool our tools or what? So, for example, a tool that we mentioned last week was boycotting. And boycotting is successful. You know, and our callers, many of them pointed out many ways that it was very useful. Although Stacey Abrams, who is well known for holding civic accountability up in the front, forefront of elected officials' faces and keeping it in front of everybody's attention, has said, well, you know, because that hurts a lot of the lower income populations, it's not that it's a bad tool, but maybe we need to refine it and make it a more subtle tool, because it does cause as much division as it does break bad rules, as it does change minds. And the other thing that we use, which is a tool to illuminate, is this whole controversial concept of, critical race theory. And so people say, well, critical race theory may seem to illuminate, but it seems to divide as well, you know. And if you've kept up with the news, you'll see that states have lost their minds. Governors, you know, mayors, etc. And it is a very useful tool, nonetheless, because it shows where our fault lines are. And those fault lines need to be seen so we can try to mend them, build some bridges. And they're designed, if we could take the heat out of the argument, to bring light. And so I thought it would be really interesting to talk to folks, I don't know, Cecil, and just say, okay, here in 2021, almost 2022, we've got 40% of our population in a state that was known for excluding black folks. The 40% of the population still don't want black folks. How do we bridge those gaps? Do the tools we have work? Do we need to come up with some new tools? Do they cause more division than they should? You know.
You have one caller, Cody. Okay, and second, you had two questions, Celeste?
Oh, well, that said them both. I just said them together.
Okay.
You know, what kind of response can we have, and do the tools we have need to be refined? Are they enough?
Okay. And yeah. also in terms of your discussion about boycott, I think you referenced Stacey Abrams.
Yes.
I think we also should note here in Oregon when the mayor made that proposal, there was a lot of resistance and
yes.
feedback, not only from established agencies such as the Oregonian Editorial Board, but also from reproductive health advocates. So the city council listened to it because people such as NAROL Pro-Choice Oregon said that their organization heard from reproductive health advocates in Texas who explained that cuts in Texas economy could, and this is the point you and Ms. Abrams made, could disproportionately impact lower-income workers, a population that is also disproportionately impacted by the new anti-abortion bill. Hearing the outcry from allies, the city council retooled its position and changed to donate, give $200,000 to agencies which provide abortion access here in Oregon, which may help Texas women who will come to Oregon and to cover some of the costs of the increases they will have. The city council voted for that, 4-1. One commissioner opposed it, Commissioner Mapps, saying that public dollars should not be used in this way in the midst of an economic health crisis right now, although he supported reproductive choice. So that's where some things are. So what are some of your thoughts? 503-231-8187. And Cody has been very patient waiting. So Cody, how are you this morning? And where do you want to lead us in this conversation this morning?
Good, Cecil and Celeste. How are you guys doing this morning?
Together, pretty good.
Excellent. Celeste was bringing up the 40%. I think we need some type of truth and reconciliation in this country. We never really had it. And there are a lot of secrets that are still being kept to this day concerning pre-civil rights era movements that was made. I'm quite sure on this particular show, sundown laws were brought up concerning Oregon and who in particular decided to move to Oregon after the Civil War in the type of environment they wanted to create for themselves that excluded anything, you know, for black people. We're talking about something that's been ingrained in culture. We're talking about something that some people may be a little embarrassed to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about conditioned behavior. Now, as you could probably discern, I am American descendant of slaves. I can trace my roots back to the East Coast. I can trace my roots back to the Mid-Atlantic. And I understand that there are people out there who aren't very proud of their lineage, and it's probably created a lot of psychological tics as a result, conflict, psychosis. And we have to be ready to forgive these people because there are a lot of decent people out there who do things and they have these knee-jerk reactions. And no one never really called them to the carpet on it, because their environment was always heavily controlled, i.e. through segregation for a long time, or de facto segregation. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't have to deal with a problem if it doesn't come forward. We never really had truth and reconciliation in this country. We never really said, you never really heard that one prominent family say, oh, yeah, by the way, we did this, too, that you guys didn't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be ready to, like, not pass out or fall backwards in your chair.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. I mean, look, we're talking about a lot of misappropriations. We're talking about the same people who experienced this world became bankers and politicians and comptrollers and powerful bureaucrats,
right,
who displayed this conditioned behavior.
Yes.
And I mean, they appear to be nice. A lot of them may even call themselves progressives. You know, as a descendant of slaves, I could tell you, from both ends, there are a lot of psychosis and a lot of mental issues that a lot of Americans have left unresolved.
Mm-hmm.
The other subject concerning the health thing, that's a health thing. When it comes up to reproductive rights and everything else, I back off. It's personal, it's medical, and anything medical, I say, look, that's medical. If you decide to go there, that's your business. If you don't decide to go there, that's your business. And I'm not going to pressure you. I'm not going to coerce you. I'm not going to tell you how you should handle your medical world.
Well, actually, that wasn't the topic today. That, you know, so you're safe.
Okay. Well, he brought up reproductive. Yeah. He brought up reproductive health.
Yeah. No, we're actually just talking about the tools that we use to either hold each other accountable or to enlighten each other about situations, like you said, truth and reconciliation. That would be one of the tools of that would be critical race theory. And so how are they in helping us bridge this gap as we find that more and more people are in this state are embracing white supremacist views or supporting that? Yeah.
Critical race theory and how it's being disseminated is very polaristic. You know, I could either use honey or I could use feces. And I think you catch more flies with honey do you do anything. And I think this critical race theory, to me, my own personal opinion, is a very clever way and is very divisive.
Sure.
It's like saying, I'm going to grab you by the back of your head and I'm going to shove your nose in it.
Mm. Well, I think it's interesting that if you did a web search on that critical race theory in terms of how often it has come up in conversations in the last 9 months, it has risen near the top. And however, if you ask 100 people what is critical race theory, I suppose not very many could give you an accurate description of what it is. Fewer even have studied it. And as I hear you saying, Corey, it has become a tool, I think, to divert meaningful conversation about how to address some of the issues that you and Celeste have raised this morning. I think the challenge is, as the two of you have suggested, is how do we really address some of these critical issues, historical issues, and what do we do about it? And I think too many people have veered off from meaningful conversations by jumping into a subject matter they have no idea what they're talking about.
Cecil, you said it yourself. You said that there's a lot of confusion concerning critical race theory, and there are lots of people who come to their own different conclusions. That's the divisiveness of the entire thing.
Well, let's be honest, though. A lot of the pillars of critical race theory are true. And in this country, you say, you know, grabbing people by the back of their head and throwing their face in it. How many times have you watched a video or even experienced it yourself where you as a human being, you're being demeaned or told that you're less than, and you have to deal with it in some kind of way? Whether you lash out, whether you swallow it and try to get your business done or what, you have to deal with it. Is that not grabbing your head and actually putting it in the bucket?
And
so my point is not that we should have very blunt tools, but not to ignore the fact that for folks of color, you know, our faces are in it every day, our heads. We're up to the top of our head in it. And if you're going to have truth and reconciliation, sometimes it's not going to be pretty. Sometimes it is going to be a little bit heated because this is a life and death issue, you know? And you've had big families who have come forth, like some years ago, Cecil and I interviewed the family of they wrote this book called Inheriting the Trade. And it's a Northern family confronts its whole family inheritance as they were the largest slave trading family in the U.S. And so, you know, in some ways they did have a real brutal reckoning, but also sometimes it was kind of candy coated. And there has to be a point where, as adults, we can take that spoonful of medicine without some sugar and just be real and put on, you know, our big people undies and just say, look, this was ugly. This was ugly.
Well, there's a lot of truth coming out about slavery, and there are some prominent, powerful Nigerian families who migrated to the United States who are actually writing articles mm-hmm. and admitting how their families became extremely rich, and how mm-hmm. There are many Nigerians who are still enjoying that inherited wealth to this day.
Yep.
And they came out and said, and these are Nigerians.
Yep.
We're talking power here. And as far as dealing with the nastiness of truth and reconciliation, I think it should be left to the adults. And I think the children can't really... We don't expose children to certain things for a reason.
Okay, that's a good point. I'm not necessarily talking about having it in schools, but you are bringing up a good point. And that's sometimes what I mean by... It's a blunt tool sometimes. Maybe we should refine it. So I totally agree with you on that.
This is something the adults should handle. I think the adults should sit down and say, look, this is some brutal stuff. And this is going to confuse a lot of impressionable children.
Mm-hmm.
I think the adults should have this. They're the only people who can handle these very ruthless, very gut-wrenching subjects. There are some adults who can't handle the brutality of this country, much less children.
Yes, yes. You get no argument from me on that, Corey. None.
Yeah. So you probably have other callers behind me, and I don't want to hold your time, but I appreciate speaking to you guys this morning.
Well, I want to thank you for starting it off and starting it off flat-footed and real with eyes open. Because, you know, you bring up the points that we need to address. I mean, the fact that we have a growing number of I'm just going to focus on Oregonians who are supporting white supremacist values, and we're not talking about ways to understand them, to sit down and find a way to reconcile, is frightening to me, because that amount has grown quite a bit. And, you know, we need to figure out some tools, and then we need to refine the tools we have so we can get what we need done. And thanks for articulating one reason why we need to do it.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 if you're in the Columbia River Gorge, like White Salmon, Washington, Hood River, Oregon, and Philomath, Oregon, it is 104.3, and of course, everywhere, KBOO.FM.
So I want to jump in and just ask for a little clarification, because
sure.
I think what I discern from, you know, several things from that previous conversation, and It showed me how important it is to have meaningful conversations. A point I was trying to make earlier was not to say that these issues in terms of the legacy of racism is not important, and how to address that is not important. I was just commenting on the laziness or the inability for us to be specific and meaningful in our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So we throw around things like critical race theory, which I suggest that few of us have studied. It's you know, actually, you know, it's a body of legal scholarship and academic movement that you probably haven't read or studied about unless you are in grad school or law school.
So, yes, that's true.
So that's, we need to put that aside. However, the point that you and Corey were making in terms of wrestling with the legacy of our society, particularly here in Oregon, is one in which we need to to handle. And it isn't only because, I think it's because many of us are in our little bubbles, and we mm-hmm. think that people think like us. And as you reminded us, a large percentage of the population continue to hold on to these racist theories, which are dangerous and impact all of us in many, many ways. And unless we understand our legacy here in Oregon, as you suggested, and as Corey suggested, in terms of the sunset laws and the legacy of legal racism, which was written in the Oregon Constitution, and the racist language was not eliminated until the 21st century.
Yes.
We will not get very far. So a question I have is that how do we have meaningful conversation with members of our own neighborhood, families, schools, to address these issues? They're not going away, and as you reminded us, many of the people continue to hold on to these opinions.
Well, I think we've kind of hit the nail on the head in one sense by, like Corey has said, and as we sometimes talk about, is conversations, creating forums. Truth and reconciliation is sitting down at the table and listening to each side's story, but listening more to those who have been aggrieved or hurt or damaged. And then when the other side speaks, it's more like, what kind of remedies and solutions can we come up with jointly? I'm not sure what kind of forum that would look like here in Oregon. I mean, mostly because we struggle here with, what is that they call it, the Portland passive aggressive attitude. You know, sometimes people don't like to tell the truth here in Portland. They don't want to hear it. They just want truth light, you know, L-I-T-E. And so when you say things like, well, Portland and Portland, Oregon is, you know, a difficult place to live in because it can be one of the most racist places you've ever been, folks are confused, they're concerned. And especially if they're white and young, they think, well, no, I this is a good club. It's a great artist community. It's a great outdoor activity community. It's a political environment. I like that. It's charged. But when you show them some of the foundation, you get shut down.
Well, and so, we have a couple of callers online.
Okay, let's go to them.
Let's go to Michael and hear what Michael has to say. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
Hello, good morning. I can make an attempt to clear up some of the confusion about critical race theory, if that's okay.
Well, when you say clear up the confusion, what exactly do you mean?
Okay, so there's critical race theory, which is something they teach in graduate school or law school, like somebody said.
Like Cecil said, yeah.
And then there are curriculum ideas that are derived from critical race theory that are being done in various grade schools and high schools
right.
and colleges around the country. Mm-hmm. And it's not that they're teaching critical race theory itself. It's that they're teaching things that are sort of age-appropriate, that have arisen out of critical race theory. And when people go to, like, their local school board and they're opposed to critical race theory, they're opposed to doing things that come from critical race theory, like, let's divide the students up into racial affinity groups and teach the white students that they have white privilege, and that when other students of color speak, it's their job to shut up and listen, for instance. So that stuff comes from critical race theory, but they're not exactly teaching critical race theory. They're teaching ideas that were derived from critical race theory.
Yes.
Okay. And so I'm not sure I understand where we go from here, Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, there are rhetorical tactics on both sides that are designed to defeat the other side and not necessarily shed any light. So when a bunch of parents show up at a school and say, we don't want this critical race theory stuff, mm-hmm. and the response is, you're a bunch of idiots. They're not teaching anything like critical race theory. Critical race theory only happens in graduate school or law school. That's just a rhetorical tactic. That's not making a valid point. That's just like purposely obfuscating by taking advantage of the fact that
so how do
you're
we
using one definition and the parents are using a different definition.
Right.
And both definitions are true.
And I think your observation in terms of how people avoid meaningful conversation is powerful. How do we then, as Celeste prayed, how do we have conversation with those on the opposite side without using these tactics? Celeste said that we need to listen. What are the tools for listening and hearing? What do you recommend, Michael?
Well, I have something that I recommend, but I have to say that it doesn't necessarily work well because I'm a pretty logical person. I'm actually sort of on the spectrum, so I rely on logic more than other people might because it's, it's like when the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your main tool is logic, then you use logic a lot. And people get mad at me a lot. People get really mad at me for bringing things up in what I'm trying to do in a logical way. And it's like, oh, you're just using the tools of the master here. Using logic in this situation is white supremacist. I've gotten things like that back. And
how do you respond when you hear that?
I try to continue to be logical but it's kind of like at that point you're in a war and the other person isn't responding to your logic. And, I'm kind of at a loss at that point what to do other than try to defend myself and point out the illogic that's going on. And I don't know what to do.
Okay. So when you reach that point, when you try to be logical and the other person isn't hearing you or responding,
mm-hmm.
do you just close down?
You shift gears and use another tool?
What happens then?
Well, I mean, in a meeting I was in last week, this kind of thing happened, but the person basically... This person who was a person of color said something like, white people don't listen to me. And meanwhile, there I was in the meeting, a white person listening to him, and the meeting was full of other white people who were also listening to him. And so I said to him, well, but here I am listening to you. Mm. And the guy went berserk on me. I mean, seriously berserk.
Let me ask, in terms...
I don't know what to do then other than go, what's going on? What are you doing? Why are you doing this?
A couple of things. One is in terms of, for me at least, when that person say, you're not listening to me, and you're saying, well, I'm being very logical, I'm listening, I think you might have different understanding of what listening is and mm-hmm. what might seem logical and reasonable to you does not for the other person. And when you have that conundrum, where do we go from here? But what do you say, Celeste? I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say something similar. It's like if a person says that you're not hearing me, you back up and regroup and ask them what they mean and ask them you know, you have to think about what does listening to someone look like, feel like, how, what are the behaviors that actually manifest it? Repeating that you're being logical is not listening, you know. Well, you got to respond.
Well,
okay, but see, I'm trying to say something now and you're interrupting me. See, that's a sign.
Go ahead.
Maybe that you might have tried to assert, no, I really care. I am trying to listen, but the person may not have felt, you know, heard. And even though you interrupt me, I understand you weren't trying to be malicious, but when you're talking about something as heated as people feeling oppressed in their life and knowing that they get killed and their family members get killed, that's a psychological tightrope, you know. And so you might want to ask the person, okay, say it again. I'm trying to listen with my heart and my head. And logic, it does not find its seat in the heart. Logic tries to run from the heart because the heart will bend the facts, logic says. Logic says the heart it's not impartial, you know. But to be a human being, you have to be partial sometimes. You have to be partial to the human condition. And so if a person says, white people don't listen to me, I would ask them, tell me what you mean. I need to know more. Help me understand. And then you're trying to build a bridge. And then your points are not as important right then as their points. Because there's something about living in a country where I don't know from one minute to the next whether I'm going to get killed because of my color that changes how you see everything, how you hear everything.
Okay. I would have been so happy to have that conversation with this fellow, except it didn't go that way. What happened was I said, but here I am listening to you. And if he would have said to me, well, you don't really understand what I mean by listening, I would have been so happy to hear that and learn about it.
Oh, okay. But here's the thing.
Wait, let me just finish.
Go ahead.
Instead, what happened was he started screaming and yelling and calling me a racist. And then he had the people who were running the Zoom meeting kick me out of the meeting. So I never had a chance to have that conversation with him, and I would have been happy to have one, but that's not how it went.
I can appreciate that, but here's something that I might suggest. Rather than repeat your listening sometimes, I'm still learning this too, so I'm not pronouncing this from on high by any means. Just say, okay, hold on, I'm stepping back. Tell me what it is you want to say. Let me hear you. And just sometimes we have to be quiet. When we were doing a restorative listening sessions here in town, two of my colleagues and I, one of the things we asked people to do was to be quiet and suspend disbelief and suspend questions that can invalidate and just listen to the person. Just encourage them. And I hear what sounds like a desire to really connect in your voice. If when you're asking people to tell the story and you have that same desire to connect in your voice, that will help sometimes cover the words that we as human beings say that stop communication. You know, it's not that you were wrong to say, I'm listening to you. I'm not saying that at all. I believe that was a good thing, but I think it might be helpful if you use that same tone of sincerity and say, please say it again. I'm listening. I don't know, because we, you know, you and I are not in the same circles, and we won't have this chance maybe to have this conversation again. But, you know, as a person of color, I could, if I heard somebody say that to me, it would be helpful. I'm not saying it would work perfectly at all, but I think it would be helpful because I would hear this tone of concern and what could be compassion in your voice, and that's what makes a difference. Sincere concern and compassion.
Well, one fact I didn't mention, it was a Zoom meeting, and I put this, this guy in the Zoom chat, so there was no place for a tone of voice.
Right.
Yes, yes, yes.
That was the only place to say that in the situation that was going on in that Zoom meeting.
I feel for you, because that is so hard. Those Zoom meetings, while we get to see each other, we're not really looking at each other. They're difficult. I sympathize for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Well, don't give up. Don't give up.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Right.
I'm not.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to More Talk Radio. The phone number is 503-231-8187. And let's go to our next caller, Dempsey. Good morning.
Good morning. How are y'all doing today?
Pretty good on a drizzly Monday.
Yeah.
Hey, I love it.
Yeah. I heard the phrase "suspend disbelief," and as I was listening to the previous caller, and he was talking about critical race theory, and I was not with him until I heard him talking about it, this is a conversation for adults, and then I understood where he's coming from, and then I had in my mind, suspend judgment. So as a critical tool for listening to somebody. Listen without judging. And speaking as a married man, married couple, we understand that, like, men and women have troubles communicating with each other because women say A and men hear B. And then
we're wired differently. Yeah.
Yeah, and then we have to go through that uncomfortable. Like, she didn't understand. She's frustrated because I didn't understand what she's trying to communicate, and then I have to defend what I thought was what I understood anyway. But
yeah.
Then Americans, black and white, have that problem as well. Because, and I'm just thinking about all those Americans who grew up with an education that was heavily influenced by the Daughters of the Confederacy. All those school textbooks.
Oh my goodness,
taught them,
yes.
All those school textbooks that taught them that the South lost its ability to express their state rights and all that kind of nonsense. We have to take that in consideration when we're talking to people, that their worldview may be A while we're trying to say B. And that's, I think we need a cultural revolution, a big cultural shift. It's a big undertaking. I'm thinking about people in like Eastern Oregon. I worked in Estacada for a while, and I grew up in Portland, so that was a cultural shock for me to see people walking around with Confederate flags on their jacket.
Oh yeah,
teenagers with Confederate flags on their phone. I'm like, well, what country am I living in? This feels like the South, the Deep South. What's going on? But that's how a lot of Oregonians are thinking.
Yes.
Well, you know why you have a lot of that Southern thinking here. The Pacific Northwest and some of the surrounding states were founded by second and third sons of the South, you know? And so, you know, as inheritance rules go, the oldest son gets. And so when you've got second and third and fourth sons and they don't have, and after the war, there was a big push for land, and a lot of these folks came right up here and settled. And this is, if you go into the history of this area, you'll find that this was supposed to be kind of a white homeland. And so given that, you're going to find a lot of Southern traditions and customs, some of which are positive and some of which carry the whole spectrum of racial oppression. And I remember traveling when I first met here. I remember walking into a bar with a friend of mine, and they had Dixie flags all over the place. I counted something like 17, 22, whatever. And against the wall was this giant flag that filled the entire wall. And I thought to myself, let me finish my drink and get out of here. You know, and I tried to engage the guy at Talkers. I grew up in the Midwest, and I've been exposed to all forms of racism. I've been all over the country. And I thought, if I can talk to him, I'll feel a little bit better. He wasn't having it. You know, he wasn't having it. And it's that kind of staunch not wanting to see me as a human being that concerns me when I read, you know, an article that came out a little while ago that says 4 out of 10 Oregonians like that whole idea of Dixie. You know, and so, yeah, I hear what you're saying. And the question, like you said, is how do we get everybody to sit down and talk about this?
A couple little bit related thoughts, but I also thought about, like, our White House. And someone earlier talked about how, like, we have these lies that are hiding in the books. They're just black and white if you look them up.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that the southern states, the southerners said very clearly that they're going to war to preserve slavery, even though that's not talked about today. And I was just thinking about the fact that our White House built by enslaved Africans, and maybe that should be a museum instead of the place where the president sits, you know, and see if we can find any names of those people who built it and put a plaque up there and then make a new White House, because all this politics that we have, all this is not working. We need to restart. We need a fresh start. And like you said, the truth and reconciliation, we need that, like Rwanda had and like South Africa had.
Yes.
We need that in the United States.
If we're willing to be honest and have that conversation, it would be a wonderful thing. But I still think, like you said, we need to push forward. We need to push forward. Well, thank you for your call.
Thank you. Y'all have a nice day.
You too.
Thank you, Dempsey. And here's a suggestion. I think that as we have these difficult conversations, and I think it's important for us to take the initiative to learn and to listen, as we have talked about today. So here's one hint. This month, from September 15th to October 15th, is Hispanic Heritage Month. It's an opportunity for all of us, and your children are in many schools, hearing and learning and reading. It's an opportunity for us to learn more, to listen more, and say for 1 month, let's learn more about our Hispanic heritage. So, one suggestion. There are many others. As we've said today, we all have to learn to listen and to shut up sometimes and to allow others. One thing that you said earlier, Celeste, is that it's important to, I thought I wrote it down, to listen to those who have been, I did not write the words you used, but those who have not been heard. And my question is that it's very hard for us to admit that we have any advantage or that we are privileged, and we all think we have not been heard. What do we do when I have not been heard, encounter yours, I have not been heard? How do we hear one another?
You know, you almost gave the answer away when you said every one of us has some element or area in our life where we feel we do not have an advantage or we've not been heard. And that right there is a common ground. If you feel you've not been heard, why then is it so hard to believe that somebody else hasn't been heard as well? Mm-hmm. And the other thing you said that caught my ear was, it's hard for us to admit we have an advantage. And I know I have an advantage in certain areas. I was blessed with a good education. And taught to think critically and challenged on very many areas to think critically, not just by my parents, but by my instructors. And so I have the responsibility then to believe that other people have not had that same advantage. I have the duty then to believe that they have maybe not been heard like I have been heard. In some areas, I'm not heard, but in others, I know I am, because comments are made about, you know, what I said or how I said it or my bearing. And those advantages mean that somebody else didn't get that advantage. You know, like for every, you know, there's a balance, you know. If there's a plus here, there's a minus there. And so that means recognizing that I gotta recognize I have a duty. There's a duty that comes with that privilege. And so I try to rid myself of those judgments that we all are taught and programmed, so that I can suspend my disbelief or suspend judgment and hear. And I listen through the same ears that, you know, with the same heart that knows that I too have moments when I'm not heard. And we have to do that.
Yeah. You know, I think so often we get caught in this ridiculous battle of oppression hierarchy.
Oh, yes. yes.
Where maybe, you know, legitimately we feel we have not been heard, that our pain is just terrible.
Our pain is the pain. Everybody else's pain is a mere affliction, uh-huh. You know.
and so is, I think at the same time we need to acknowledge our pain.
Mm-hmm.
But as you reminded us, that we all are at different point privileged or not privileged, heard and not heard, and recognize those moments when we have power and those moments when we do not have power. And for me, at least, it's sort of like try to become aware of my surroundings and my power, or when I have it and when I don't have it, be aware of that.
People don't like, I can't remember which caller was, it says the critical race theory is a higher level education. And, you know, it was created by a man that we had as a guest here, you know, Derek Bell. The critical race theory is about 40 years old. So Derek Bell, who is a professor, law professor.
Harvard Law School.
Yes, who we had as a guest, was one of the architects of it. And it's not about calling people racist, you know, and that's it. It does dig deeper, and it looks at the foundation of our educational system, our economic system, our social constructs and everything, and it points out how these are all interwoven to oppress people who are not white, or who are not the right. Wait, let me say that again. Who are not the right white. And so people don't understand that it's not just about being black and oppressed. It's not just about being red, brown, or yellow and oppressed. It's also about people oppressing people. And I agree with what Corey said. It doesn't belong in the grade schools. There's something else you teach in the grade school, which is acceptance.
Well,
you know, and understanding and empathy. If we can teach those things and you know, the humanity of people, then kids grow up liking kids. They like people.
Yeah, and that's true. However, I think we do teach those things.
Mm-hmm.
Those we do have from an early age, certain signals are said. So we do learn what the proper role of women are supposed to keep silent.
Mm-hmm.
Indigenous people are not unheard or invisible. I think we all learn these lessons. And as one caller said, you know, we all have those textbooks.
Well, some of them were made by people who didn't want us to learn.
Right.
You know, and that was the other problem.
It was Texas school book that
hey,
we all had.
There you go. Well, you know, I had something else I wanted to say, and I forgot it, and it's 8:58. But I do want to thank everybody for calling, for listening, and encourage people to dig deeper. You know, we didn't talk as much as we could have about the fact that we have states, or rather counties in this state, that want to secede, and how we're going to address that. But I do want to challenge everybody to figure out a way you can reach out. Figure out a way to make a connection and build a bridge. Because 4 out of 10, some of these people are our families, our friends, our work colleagues. And if we can build a bridge there, then we can build a bridge, you know, across hearts and minds. Hope you stay connected to KBOO Portland, because we are your community connection. And stay put, because the Old Mo Variety Hour is coming up next. Kudos to our engineer, Ray. See you later, Cecil.
Good day.
Thank you.